Good afternoon. You're listening to Glenn Coble, and my show is called A Progressive Life. And we're here the day after election. We had a great time yesterday during the election. People were just so courteous to us. I spent the night at the Democratic headquarters, or it was actually at the Elks Club, and we had a nice night there. Lots of interest in the election, and Terry spent the night at the Republican headquarters, and Linda was down at the Board of Election, and then we had people up here in the studio, and we bounced around quite a bit and had a good night. It was really quite a interesting night. It was also quite educational. We found out that even if you do get charged with some sort of irregularity, you're still going to win, as Mr. Landon did. And I'm sure that story isn't over yet, and we'll find out more about it and contact you. Yeah, we'll tell you what we find out, and that's what we do here on WWGH. By the way, excuse me, I got to stand up so I can get into my pocket, so I can get my Halls out. I found out if I take a Halls, and I'm probably not supposed to say that name because that's kind of a commercial, but if I take a Halls, it seems to keep me in a better shape as far as talking long time. You'll notice that sometimes in my shows, I kind of get verklempt, as they say, toward the end of the show, and I'm going to try to avoid that. Now, it's a little easier to suck on a cough drop if you don't have to also talk on a radio show, but we're going to give it our best shot. Hey, put your thinking caps on. Today, I decided I have a lot of friends, and I have a few friends, but I have a lot of acquaintances that have said to me that they didn't understand some of the language of the elections and some of the language of government and politicians and stuff like that. So I went to a site and pulled off 12 pages almost like a glossary of political phrases, and I thought maybe we could go over some of them, make you and me a little smarter than we have been. It probably won't get into progressive life stuff, but it will be educational for you. Right at the very beginning is a term called altruism. The Halls are getting to me. Now, altruism is something I remember as a kid arguing with my mother that you couldn't be altruistic. And she always argued that, yes, you could be altruistic. It's just there are very few and far between people who are altruistic. Now, let me explain what it is. Here's the definition of altruism: the devotion to the interests of others above oneself. And by the way, the opposite of that is egoism. I know a lot of those people, including probably yours truly. I try to be altruistic when I can. But that's not really the definition of altruism, being altruistic when you can. But that's a term that we probably couldn't attach to many politicians right now. There are good politicians, there are great people who are politicians, but very few of them, I would say, are altruistic, because you have to be, as a politician, you kind of have to be self, not absorbed, but self-aware, because you need to know who you really are just so you can decide that you want to run for office. When I ran this last time for state rep, I really went through a thought process where I wrote down all all the things I believed in and all the things I didn't believe in, and I wrote down all my positives and all my negatives. It was quite self-awareing for me. I you know, until you write them down, you kind of gloss over the things you aren't good at, or you gloss over the things that you're not particularly nice about. But I came down with the thought that I had more pluses than I had negatives, and that's why I decided to go ahead and run. I'm kind of helping out my friend who was on last night, Mike Larson. I'm trying to remember what it's the 4th District. He's going to run for congressman in the 4th District, which right now is held by Jim Jordan. And he's going to let me help him in this area. I'll be kind of a steering committee, a chairman of this area for his run. And I'm really proud that I'm not sure if that's the term I would what my position will be, but I'm going to be helping him. Let's leave it at that. I'm going to be helping him in this area, and that ought to give me enough politics to last me, because I'm sure it's not going to be a real pleasant trip running against a person like Jim Jordan, who tends to yell and scream a lot. All right, you got your thinking caps on. You got your notebook out, and you can now write down what altruism is, because I gave you the answer. There's a term that a lot of people are afraid the United States may become, and that is we may have anarchy here in the United States. Now, the chances of that are slim and none, and I think slim's leaving town. But anarchy is a condition of lawlessness and disorder brought about by the absence of any controlling authority. It sounds vaguely familiar, doesn't it? Right now, we are going through a period of lawlessness and disorder, because we really don't. The only controlling authority that we seem to have, or at least that the president wants us to have, is the president himself. And I don't think that's going to work very well. Of course, we have local police, and we have other controlling forces. So we're not in a truly anarchical situation. But it's a good word to know, because there are people that think we would be better off if we had an anarchy. You know, but then you get back, if you really have an anarchy, it's kind of like the old West, where everybody straps on a gun. If I don't like you, I shoot you. That probably wouldn't go very far. You'd have to be the fastest gun in town to get anything done. And then if you kill everybody, then you won't get anything done, because you need people to help you get things done. So, this is an interesting word, and I probably am going to mispronounce it, but it's called androcracy. There we go. Now I got it. Androcracy. Now, this is kind of interesting. I don't know of a modern society like this, but I'm fairly certain that some of the ancient societies had androcracy. It's a state or society ruled by men, where moral authority and control of property may also be exclusively in the hands of males. And I would say that's kind of where we came from back in the good old days, back in the days of the Romans, and back in the days even when Well, when Jesus was alive, there were a lot of societies that were ruled. Matter of fact, most societies were ruled by men only. Now, there are a few societies in the world that are ruled by women only, and I can't honestly throw one out at you. I don't, but I have seen it on television. You know, some documentaries about that type of society. There's another term that you will see used more and more lately, autocracy. Autocracy is a form of government where unlimited power is held by one single individual. Now, people throw that out referring to our president, but that's not truly what an autocracy is. He does have a lot of people under him that rule their own little fiefdoms unto themselves. Autocracy is only one single individual, more like a king. That's not quite where we are right now. A term that's been used an awful lot lately because of the way we run our government, kind of old school, I guess. We run it without thought towards mores and morals and that sort of thing, and one person is in charge. And anyway, this term is called banana republic, and a lot of people say, well, the United States is turning into a banana republic. Well, we'd have to go a long way. A true banana republic is a small country, and that we are not. A small country economically dependent on a single agrarian export commodity. I'm not sure this cough drop's really helping. It's typically, bananas down in South America, that sort of thing. But they always have a corrupt government. Or at least it seems like they always have a corrupt government. And it's people refer to this particular Trump government as kind of leaning that way. But we're not anywhere close to a true banana republic. Another term that's used a lot, we're down to the B's, is bipartisan. Most people, I would guess, have an idea of what bipartisan is. But let me read it to you so you'll know. Now, I hope you're taking notes. Bipartisan. Adjective to describe a situation where the nominally opposing political parties come together to agree on an initiative. Technically, two parties coming together. That is bipartisan. You couldn't say that of like the English government, because there are several parties in the English, in the British government. So the United States only has two real parties. Occasionally we throw in a third party candidate, but they rarely get much notice. So bipartisan, it would be like if the Republicans and the Democrats in Congress decided that they wanted to do gun legislation on bump stocks or something along that line, and they both agreed to it. That would be considered a bipartisan finding. From what I understand, right now there are several hundred, two, three, maybe 400 bills that have been passed in bipartisan way that are waiting for Mr. McConnell to let them be voted on by the Senate, but we haven't gotten there. One of the things that they talk a lot about in the when the talking heads are talking on MSNBC or Fox News or something like that. They talk about black letter law. And that's a law where there may have been conjecture as to its meaning, but where appellate courts have subsequently settled the issue. So it's an kind of a law that was made because there were enough people that agreed to what it should be that it was settled by an appellate court. And so, in other words, it is a law. It's one that we have had rulings on. Bourgeoisie, that was a term, and it's French, obviously. That was a term that my brother used to call me, and I don't think either one of us knew what he meant. I think he thought it was a bad term when he used to call me that. And what bourgeoisie is, it's a Marxist term. It's now used to describe middle-class professional living in relatively luxurious lifestyles. And we have a lot more now. People that are living, professional people that are living in pretty luxurious lifestyles. I watch commercials on TV, and sometimes I get so angry. What was the old commercial? I can't remember. Something was disaster. and it was had to do with something that you look at. A person's hair was disaster or something like that. Well, let's face it. There are people in Kenya. There are people in all sorts of countries throughout the world that could care less that they have their fingernails polished and or they have their hair perfectly combed. So streaks are disaster. That was the term, and I can't remember what it had to do with. Capitalism, which is what so many people say our government is made up of and run by. Capitalism is an economic system based on the recognition of private property rights, where prices are dictated by supply and demand, and where the means of production and distribution of goods and service derive from privately owned resources or capital operating within operating within an unregulated market. Well, we don't have pure capitalism because most of our markets are regulated. The problem with having pure capitalism is it leads to pure greed, and probably it leads to pure corruption because it makes money God is what it does. And I'm not sure I want to go and live that way where money is God. Now, when we passed the thing called Citizens United, we were kind of leaning that direction. And there are a lot of people that are trying to have Citizens United repealed. It hasn't happened yet. I don't even think it's become a very serious movement. A lot of people talk seriously about it, but I'm not sure they know how to get that changed. One of these days, I'll understand why the Supreme Court thought that was a good idea. And it has led to an awful lot of money being thrown into politics. One of my ideas about politics is that we should go back to a situation where if you're running at a local level, let's say you're allowed to accept up to $100 from any one person, and no one, and you cannot send it through like a, what do they call them? You can't do it anonymously. You can't turn them into a fund allow it to go through that way. Only individuals can give money, and you can only give to any one person one time, and let's say if it's at a local level, maybe $100. If it's at a state level, maybe $250, and at a national level, $1,000, and only as individuals. That seems a lot more logical to me, that would take corporations out of making the laws. And we've gotten to a situation now, in my opinion, that people don't make laws anymore. People don't even have any input on the laws that are made. Corporations make the laws. They send their idea of how a law should be written, and the Congress will take that and do it verbatim quite often. And the private citizens be damned. They don't really have much say because they're not giving enough money. Now, you do have a say if you camp on the on your congressman or your senator's doorstep and call him daily or write him letters. Or that, you can have some influence if enough people do that. But it's got to be a huge amount of people. Anyway, all right. One of the things that was talked about as being a bad thing was chain migration, or serial migration, as some people call it. And that's a term to describe a situation in some countries where the granting of permanent residence to one foreign applicant on whatever grounds, humanitarian, skills, lottery, whatever, will give the new resident rights to bring their spouse or other family members, which turn into and grant further foreigners' rights because they're related to somebody that has been made a citizen. There were a lot of people that absolutely hated that, but in fact, our first lady is beneficiary of chain migration. Most of us are. Let's face it. I don't know how far you go back in the United States, but at some point, most of your families did not live in the United States. They came to the United States and they brought their families with them. That's kind of makes it silly to be against chain migration, because that's kind of how we all got here, except for the Native Americans. Okay, another term that we hear a lot of recently is cloture. Cloture is now don't forget, you got to write this down, and that's a tough word to spell. That's not a tough word, but since you haven't seen it very often, it's hard to. For people like me who don't spell well, it's hard to know how to spell it. It's C-L-O-T-U-R-E, cloture. It basically is French, and it means ending or conclusion. So if there is a motion in Congress for cloture, that means that motion is to close the vote. All right. Confederation. Now, that's something most of you who had civics when you were young, and I don't know if they still teach a term a class termed civics, but they would talk about the Confederation, which was the United States prior to the Constitution. And the Confederation, that's a form of federalism where the individual regions that make up the state or country exercise a large degree of autonomy. So it would mean like Ohio has a large amount of autonomy. We can do whatever we want to do inside our borders, okay? Often the right to succeed, or the sole right to raise taxes. the funding of central government comes from that region. So that's kind of what a confederation is. And states' rights kind of lend themselves towards confederations. Now, the big term that as a progressive I look at a lot is the term called conservative. And often it means so many different things, and it means different things to different people. It can be a good term. It can be a bad term. I like to think of myself as a fiscal conservative, and yet I am a social liberal. What the definition of conservative is often taken as a synonym or synonymous, you know what I mean, with right wing, with a penchant for censorship and state control to protect against immoral personal, and by the way, that immoral is in quotation marks, immoral personal behavior, but technically an attitude of or belief in the established order and very suspicious of change. And it's a person whose feet are a little bit more in mud than on a fast surface. They like to move ahead very, very slowly. People who are fiscally conservative usually like to not spend money willy-nilly. And if you are a social conservative, you tend to, anti-abortion people would tend to be considered a social conservative. I hope that helps you on that. Another thing that I'm obviously not going to get through the entire A through Z on these, so we'll do it some other time, but another thing that falls in under the C is consumer price index. I often wondered what the consumer price index really was. They talk about it just about every day when you're watching stock market reports or anything along that line. It's a measure of inflation by comparing at regular intervals the price of a set of basic consumer goods and services purchased by households. So they may watch consumer goods. They may watch pork bellies, and they do it on a regular basis. And if they check the pork bellies every week for a year, that'll give them a consumer price index of what pork bellies are selling for throughout wherever they've been watching it. Here's another one. Crony capitalism. Now, I haven't heard that recently, but crony capitalism is a free market economy system which is abused to the degree where some business people have become successful due to their relationship with the government. So if you're a you build helicopters, you may be accused of having crony capitalism if you're selling all your helicopters to the Army or the Air Force. The cronies of the politicians, you receive, and these would be the people that own the company, and they receive favoritism on legal permits. So let's say you are a crony capitalist and you make these helicopters, but you don't want them to have to be efficient. You don't care whether you burn up the air, the oxygen, and the fuel. You may find a way to get special favoritism for those permits and go around them. And that's what crony capitalism is. Basically, a company that has found a way Not necessarily to pay off the government, but found a way to give the government something they want in return. They get something the crony capitalist wants. Kind of what they're looking at right now with the situation with those missiles over in Ukraine. Anyway. All right, here's another term that we're up to the D's, and I only have about 15 more minutes, so we're not going to make it all the way through, but get your notebook out, and demagogue, D-E-M-A-G-O-G-U-E, and we hear a lot of that lately. Demagogues are leaders who gain popularity by appealing to prejudice and basic instincts, considered manipulative and dangerous. In other words, by working off the fear of racism, of other races, you can put yourself in a situation where you could be considered a demagogue. Now, I know our president has been called that lots of times. I'm not sure if they're using the correct term when they say that. But anyway, that's what a demagogue is. Here's the mother of all of the terms in politics, democracy. And I imagine many of you know where it came from. It actually came from the Greek word demos, for ordinary or common people. That's where it comes from, where common people have the power and the strength. Now, there are all sorts of types of democracies, and you'd be hard-stretched to give our type of democracy a lasting term. It's not what you would call a pure democracy, obviously. The common people really have lost their power to the common corporation. Now, this is something that's talked a lot about, especially in racial context, racism and stuff like that. But it can be used in just about any place where somebody is trying to say something without saying it outright, all right? It's called a dog whistle, a type of political speech where a campaigner either does or is alleged to put code words in his or her speech to imply more than what is really being said on the face of it. For example, family values might simply refer to programs benefiting a normal nuclear family. And a normal nuclear family is normal, I guess, is a mother, a father, and 2.5 children. that would be a term for family values. It's what those people seem to think they want nationwide. It's really hard to determine what everybody wants. That's why we have elections. Unfortunately, many of our elections no longer are one person, one vote. They come down to one person, one industry, and one group of people have a vote. Ceases to become one person, one vote. Dystopia. Now, that's an interesting word. I like the sound of that word. It sounds like something that you would have heard about if you read Orwell's 1984. That book always kind of frightened me. It's an alternative to utopia. And utopia is a perfect society. Dystopia is more of a nightmare vision of society beyond that even. It's just a nightmare version of society. They're in a dysfunctional state, and they're actually quite often it's a totalitarian society, and therefore you may associate it with George Orwell's 1984, A Dystopia. All right, here is the term that all of you who are my age know something about, just because we grew up at the end of World War II. It's called fascism. For years, I didn't know what fascism meant. And my eldest son uses that term loosely to imply anybody he doesn't like. It's an authoritarian and nationalistic political ideology. It embraces strong leadership, singular collective identity. In other words, everybody is going to be in the party, and the will to commit violence or wage war to further their interests. That's part of fascism. It's adverse to concepts such as individualism and pluralism and multiculturalism and you understand it's just not any of those isms. The name derives from collective identity, the league connotation of Italian fascio. So anyway, that's what the Nazis were. They were considered fascists. And that is not a state that many people would like to move towards now. Another form of government, federalism. By the way, I was going to spell fascism for you, because it's one of those terms that doesn't look right. F-A-S-C-I-S-M, fascism. All right, let's get back to the federalism. That's a system under which government powers are divided between the central government and the states or provinces, all of whom are in a geographical territory. It's opposite to unitary systems such as the UK and New Zealand and Japan and stuff like that. I hope that makes that a little more clear. It's a system like what Britain has. Now, this is a term that I'm not sure it hasn't changed in recent years, but filibuster. This is the way I learned it as a kid. Filibuster is a form of legislative obstruction by conditioning. It's talking. Some people read, you know, they'll get up and they'll read the dictionary, or they'll read the Bible for hours and hours. And what it does is it slows down government. That is what I learned was a filibuster. Now they have different, a filibuster proof rules, and they have, if you have to have 60 of 100 people voting for it, has something to do with it. But when I was a kid, filibustering was getting up and talking for 24 hours and really slowing down the government. All right, Fourth Estate. You're writing all this down, I assume. The Fourth Estate, it's an unofficial political institution and authority comprising, like the press or any other form of media. The Fourth Estate I usually refer to as anybody who's in media, whether it's written or television or radio, is in the Fourth Estate. And it's one of those things that I personally think the Fourth Estate is. We have three forms of, three things that run our government: our judicial, our legislative, and our executive. I really believe that the Fourth Estate, the media, is a fourth. If it's an honest media, if it attempts to tell honest and straightforward, true news, it becomes a fourth part of government. Excuse me. Here's another. I've got to find my other halls. I'm sorry about this. Here's another term that you'll hear a lot, especially now. Especially if you watch political stations like Fox or MSNBC or CNN or places like that. Friday news dump. The practice of governments releasing their unpopular news stories just before the weekend. And you know why they do that? That's so that you won't hear it. You won't know about it. There is a lot of news that's dumped on Friday afternoon, hoping that you're on your way to the beach and not paying any attention to the news, so you might not hear that somebody did something that you wouldn't like. All right, that's what a Friday news dump is. Glasnost. If you are closer to my age, you will remember that term was used a lot back in our relationships with the former Soviet Union. It's a policy that commits government to greater accountability and visibility, such as freedom of information laws. It's actually a term Russian for publicness, which seems to be... It doesn't seem to be a whole lot of that going on right now in Russia, but that's what Glasnost stands for. Okay, I got. Everybody knows what GOP stands for. I think GOP stands for the Grand Old Party, basically the Republican Party, GOP. But do you know what GNP and GDP stand for? Yeah, some of you do, some of you don't. Gross National Product, GNP. The Gross National Product is the total output of goods and services annually produced by a country, whether on or offshore. Okay? That's the Gross National Product. Now, GDP stands for Gross Domestic Product, and that is the total amount of produced onshore, not including stuff that is produced from overseas and then put into the coffers of an American company. GDP is the total amount produced onshore, whether by local or foreign entities. Those are terms that you'll hear a lot, especially when you're listening to politicians and economists that are talking about the American situation. We right now, one side of the situation is saying that government is, or that we are doing extremely well economically, and there's another side that says maybe we're heading for a recession, or maybe we're not doing quite as well as we're saying we're doing, so you got to know what GDP and GNP are. Another term, and I don't have a whole lot more time, but I did think people would be interested in the term hack, because they'd use that a lot also on TV. I watch way too much Sunday morning television, where I watch all these talking heads talking about politics. But a hack is pretty much a derogatory term for a writer or a journalist who are, I guess, unexceptional in their talent. The people that are, especially a political hack is somebody, it's kind of a bad term to talk about people who write about politics all the time. and maybe aren't quite sure of what they're talking about. And there are, and quite often a Republican will call a Democratic newsman a hack, and a Democratic politician will call a Republican news person a hack. It's a term that you will hear used a lot. It's like it really doesn't mean anything except it means that you don't respect that person's ability that's talking about it. Well, let's call that a day as far as your lesson in political terms go. You're listening to Glenn Coble here on A Progressive Life, and I'm really happy that several of you tuned in and listened to us all night last night as we brought you election returns. I think we were the only place in town where you could get the election returns as they happened, especially since it wasn't a Friday night dump, but there was a dump in the computer stuff at the Board of Election, and we brought it to you live. With numbers that were not done as easily as they could have been done if we hadn't had a drop-off of the computer system with our Board of Election. Well, once again, thanks so much for listening to me. I'm Glenn Coble, and you're listening to A Progressive Life. Now I have to go and talk to my doctor. Me and Charlie, we go to our doctors quite often. Have a great day.